We have to do this quickly. International jet setting author Gary Rudoran has flown from Israel back to Chicago to take a variety of meetings, see a variety of people, attend a variety of bat mitzvahs, and he's here sitting down with me now to talk about one of the fundamental reference work we used to write The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, his book, Comedy by the Numbers, co-written with Eric Hoffman. Gary, you have done the world a service with your research and your book. What's it like being such an authority on comedy?
Thank you for possibly the most humbling introduction.
I'm sorry. I wish we had more time.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 377, By the Numbers. Longtime podcast listeners will remember my conversation with Gary Rudoran about the TV show The West Wing. Well, in addition to being a West Wing nerd, Gary is a playwright, director, and comedy nerd, comedy scholar, and co-author of Comedy by the Numbers, The 169 Secrets of Humor and Popularity, which he wrote with Eric Hoffman. Comedy by the Numbers has been in my library since it was published by McSweeney's in 2007, and while it wasn't really the only research source we used for our show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, it was a great guide to show that we were on the right track and a very funny, enjoyable read. Gary blew into Chicago recently, bringing the polar vortex with him, and helped me do one of my favorite things, talking shop in a pub.
I'm just glad I had a variety of bat mitzvahs to attend this weekend in Chicago. I actually won't attend just one bat mitzvah at a time now. I require a minimum of three bat mitzvahs in any area for me to travel from Israel.
Listen, you got to put on you put on the shmata. You got to have more than one place to go.
So one of the things about comedy is a Gentile like you saying the word shmata is instant comedy. One of the things in our books, we have a one of the items is kids doing things grown-ups do, which includes cursing. Little kids cursing is funny,
right?
But it also includes little kids using phrases like "oi." If you had a 5-year-old who just witnessed something like a balloon fight, and then they cut away to just a close-up of him going, "Oi." Oh, it's especially good if he's maybe a Mexican child or someone who doesn't even look Jewish.
Right.
Because it's not that funny to hear Jews say Jewish stuff.
No.
But if you can get a good sort of Hispanic Yiddish saying...
Right.
People will laugh at that.
Well, what I loved so much about the book, and when you wrote it? You've written it.
So our book started, like most great books, as a pamphlet.
Yes.
And
we had a series of bar conversations, probably.
Yes. Yeah. It was scribblings. First, it was scribblings on napkins, and then doodles, of course. And then we made it into a full-fledged pamphlet, which is true. I'm not just being facetious. So Eric and I and another gentleman named Mike Mondrostelli created a show called The Idiotic Death of Two Fools, which I've always described as waiting for Godot taken to its logical conclusion.
And that premiered at The Annoyance, am I right?
Premiered at The Annoyance in the mid-90s. And then we also took it to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And during the show, the run of the show and the process of the show, we used to banter a lot about comedy and a lot about comedy bits. And we started referring to them as like numbers. So, you know, the shtick became having its own category. Matt Walsh was one of the people who also threw around with us. And we used to do this at The Annoyance a lot. So when we were taking the show to Edinburgh, The Idiotic Death of Two Fools, in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, a lot of people put out postcards and hand out postcards all the time. And I thought, well, maybe we can one-up that. And we actually did create a little 6-page pamphlet. Oh. Eric did these drawings. And what it was mostly a list of 102 items, like everything from the double take, the triple take, the quadruple take, to sitting on something wet. to kids doing things grown-ups do, to druggy humor, Jews and their idiosyncrasies, the elderly and their foibles, things like that. So we had mostly in a list form with just some lines for each one because it was a pamphlet and we were paying for it by itself. Anyway, we got a great reaction to the pamphlet.
And this was the handout just to get people to come to see your show.
Right. So we handed this out all over town. We brought thousands with us. And we got a great reaction to it. Afterwards, Eric and I, who had really written most of the pamphlet, decided to pursue it a little bit more. And we did a mock-up, like a six-page full mock-up with expanding upon some of the numbers and ideas about graphics. And Eric's great at graphics. Eric moved out to L.A. and got a job working on Mr. Show. And during the course of that, he and Bob Odenkirk got along great, and he also met Naomi Odenkirk, who had done a great book called Mr. Show, What Happened, which she ended up publishing herself. It's a great anthology about the Mr. Show series for comedy nerds like us. Well, Naomi was gracious enough to say to people on the staff, I had a good experience with this book, and at a certain point satisfied by it, and I'd be interested in helping anybody or talking about projects. And Eric called me up and said, explained that Naomi was interested. Hey, what if we pitched them Comedy by the Numbers? So I sent the original pamphlet as well as the mock-up that we had done to Naomi. And, you know, sort of the rest is history. She got Bob involved. Bob loved it. Bob is a great connoisseur of comedy, as well as a real sort of godfather for other comedians. He wants to, like, help get it out there.
That's great.
I'm not saying he's Italian. I'm not saying he's ordered any murders. I'm just saying he is a mensch. There, I said a Jewish word.
And a pretty darn good actor in Breaking Bad.
And here's the other funny thing. Sort of funny thing. So Naomi was great during the process, helped us, like, focus and edit. Eric and I continued to write. We had been about 25 pages together. And Bob, on his own, contacted Dave Eggers and said, hey, I think you would like this stuff. We sent the stuff to Dave. Eric, Dave was in L.A. I was not. Eric met with him by himself, and Dave basically said, I love this. Keep writing. We'll publish it. We didn't even get a contract, I think, till like 3 weeks before the book came out. I didn't find out till later that Bob didn't know Dave. Bob had done stuff, but Bob didn't really know Dave, and it was just awesome of Odenkirk to do that.
Absolutely. The thing I like so much about the book is that, yes, it's for comedy nerds, and yes, it breaks down the art of comedy into this absurd and somewhat random list of numbers, but it's actually extremely useful. You guys have put a lot of thought into what makes things funny. And you've codified it in a way that I think for the layperson, the non-comedy nerd, you can read this book, Comedy by the Numbers, and get a sense of, oh, it's both really that easy and really difficult. Does that make sense?
It does. Look, we're trying to satirize how to be funny books.
Right.
Because there are some out there that sincerely think that they can teach you how to be funny.
Right.
We state in the book that we think that there are three types of people. People who are funny, people who aren't funny but think they are, and people who aren't funny but want to be funny.
Right.
And we tell our readership that we think you're number three, most likely, and that's why you need our book.
Hello. As far as I know, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In this winter and spring of 2014, you can see us perform all the great books abridged at the Laguna Playhouse in Laguna Beach, California for all of March, The Complete World of Sports abridged in La Crosse and Green Bay, Wisconsin in March, and The Complete History of Comedy abridged at Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts in April and May. Plus, our three-month 60-city UK tour of the Bible, The Complete Word of God abridged, continues with performances in Canterbury, Camberley, Worcester, Uppingham, Swindon, Exeter, Bedford, Grantham, Borehamwood, Eastbourne, Tenterden, Maidstone, Diss, Lincoln, Barnard Castle, New Brighton, Cardiff, Neathport, Talbot, Nottingham, Kendall, Gainsborough, Burnley, Bradford, Llanelli, spell Llanelli, Holyhead, Stockport, Stourport, Burton-upon-Trent, Durham, Southport, Barrow, Inverness, Keswick, Wakefield, Buxton, Westacre, Andover, Loughborough, Wellingborough, Tewkesbury, Solihull, Croydon, and Chipping Norton. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Gary Rudoran about comedy and the relationship between being a practitioner and a scholar.
When I first joined the Reduced Shakespeare Company, I knew I was funny in real life. I didn't necessarily think I could be funny as a writer or be funny as an actor. I just knew I had a certain gift for being amusing in as a person. So joining the Reduced Shakespeare Company, it was a crash course in suddenly learning comedy, learning how three-man comedy teams act. It was me watching a lot of Marx Brothers, where I had been more of an Abbott and Costello guy growing up and a little Lauren Hardy guy growing up, so I was more aware of the double act. Suddenly the three-man troupe, the Marx Brothers and the Stooges, that was a dynamic that was interesting to me. So I never thought about it until I actually had to be it, until I actually had to do it. But you have both done it and thought about it. So it makes you both a practitioner and a scholar of the art of comedy.
Well,
there wasn't a question there. I've just stopped talking and I threw the microphone at you.
I have to go back to my humble brag of saying, well, thank you for giving me those titles. What I learned is, and I'm very similar to you. When I grew up, there's so much comedy that I loved, and I grew up in a household with my dad had humor books and Alan Sherman albums and Tom Lear, and I loved smart, funny stuff, and I just soaked it up. And when I started to do improvisation and then got involved with the Annoyance Theater early on, right, as the Annoyance started, and Mick Napier asked me to direct, and then I started taking on a whole other view of comedy because I wanted it to now not just be a funny bit,
right.
I wanted it to have some bigger sense to it.
Right.
Which is one of the great things about improv. When you're improvising on stage, you are in fact an actor and a writer and a director all at the same time.
Right.
You have to take on that responsibility. And I always love that.
And hopefully not an editor.
or at least a good editor.
A good editor, yeah.
There's a lot of bad editors out there in improv. Omania. One of the things I learned as a director that is had to do at the beginning of this book, really, is that there is a little bit of a science to comedy.
Mm.
And it has a lot to do with timing. That's a cliche, but cliches come from somewhere.
Yep.
And there was a particular show I was directing that had a lot of funny stuff in it. But what would happen sometimes is there would be a setup, and then because the cast were improvisers, sometimes somebody would throw in an extra line right before the punchline. So you start to realize that the relationship between setup and punchline is an important one. And if you throw in a bunch of other shit, you lose, the punchline gets farther away and it gets weaker and weaker. So I am sort of a fan of a really good setup and a really good punchline and the well-timed pause. You know, there's nobody who did a pause better than Jack Benny or Bob Newhart does a great pause. One of my first teachers who was also became a dear friend of mine, Martin DeMott, who if you've talked to any improvisers on your podcast, as you know, if you've studied with Martin, it sort of changed your life. The first class, Martin said, you don't need to try to be funny. You can get the funniest laugh in a scene just by going, ahem. It's all about context.
Right.
And I discovered that, you know, that's true.
Yeah.
There are little things that you can do just to change the perception of what the joke was going to be, and you get an even better joke.
Yeah. You talk about that rhythm and the sort of... I guess I want to ask about the relationship between between your other life, because you are an architect also by trade. And I know there's a relationship between mathematicians and musicians, because music is very formal and organized and logical. Is there a relationship between architecture and comedy? Have you found?
I have found, and it could be the world's greatest rationalization for me, just because I've chosen these two creative outlets. Yeah. I also do other creative pursuits that don't pay money as well, so I'm trying to go through the whole list. But for me, architecture is about you kind of are dealt with a script. If I'm going to design a house for you, which I'd love to do, I'm trying to get business out of this podcast also. If I'm going to design a house for you, I sit down and you've got a script.
Right.
You've got an idea about what you need in this house, and my charge is really to make that come to life and make it come to life three-dimensionally.
Yeah.
When I start working on a play, any at the Annoyance, a lot of plays just start with a title.
Right.
You know, there's a play I wrote, a one-man show, it's called So I Killed a Few People, and I started with a very simple one-line premise, which was, it's a one-man show about a serial killer on death row whose last request is to put on a one-man show.
Which is a great conceit.
So I started just with that and then started filling in what the show needed in terms of plot and character and funny. Where I relate the two is in the process of creating something funny is a construction unto itself.
Yeah, interesting. So we say in the Complete History of Comedy Abridged, we ask the question, and it's a fundamental question, who are the funniest people on Earth? Who are the least funny people on Earth? And why did the latter attempt to exterminate the former? Talk to me about being a Jew. And how does that help?
Well,
in terms of the funny.
The way you constructed it is that I think the least funny people on Earth are the people that take themselves way too seriously. I'm not saying Germans or Nazis.
Not all of them. Many, 95% of them, sure, but not all of them, not 100%.
I will say that not a lot of people talk about it, but the Nazis were the most humorless group of people ever. And they took themselves way too seriously. And they tried to exterminate the Jews, who were, quite frankly, the funniest. We say this in the book. No offense to anybody else, but they were pretty much the funniest slaves.
Yeah, well,
historically, I think that they started out as the funniest slaves. But
I don't disagree with you, but I just want to give a shout out to African Americans who invented the blues. Jews invented comedy, but African Americans the blues, and that's pretty good.
Oh yeah, no.
From slavery. Okay.
I shouldn't say they.
Those people, I think, is what you meant to say.
If I was a Republican, that's what I would have meant to say. Yes. I will say blanketly, people who take themselves too seriously are the worst kind of people in the world. And people who have gone through struggles and had their problems and still yet find a way to laugh and smile and be self-effacing, that's the key to comedy. You've got to sort of keep an attitude that no matter what happens, it's possible to get a laugh. There is an old thing about, is there anything you can't tell a joke about? Where do you come down on that question? Is there anything you can't tell a joke about?
No, I don't think there's anything you can't tell a joke about. But the context has to be right, and it better be a pretty goddamn funny joke.
It better be.
Yeah.
And if you want to tell a really, really horrible joke, it's also funny if it comes from like a cute 8 or 9 year old girl. And I will tell you that just yesterday, a cute 8, 9 year old girl said to me, I got a joke for you. And she said, what's worse than biting into an apple and eating a worm?
Eating half a worm.
No, she said, the Holocaust.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your comedy numbers via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and at a Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, sterling example of comedy number 80, Mr. Clumsy, Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Kim Carson. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Weird Al Yankovic, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 377 1131st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
But you know what you said? What you said about learning how to laugh and learning how to be self-effacing, and you said it's good rules for comedy. It's good rules for life.
Right, which is why if you are open-minded enough to include comedy in your life, you'll be a better person and you'll probably get laid more. No, that is proven to be untrue, but at least people will laugh at you while they're not sleeping with you.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.